to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Alley's Mr. Mel Weber. S&P futures up a whole $2. Dow futures up 19. NASDAQ futures up 3. As we maybe continue the rally, although we didn't rally on Friday. We're down just a little bit. Well, mixed, I guess. We were mixed. So a couple of the averages kept going, but a couple did not. But quiet weeks. We had some movement in the oil market, some movement in the gold market in the last week, which you don't normally expect. So it's been a little busier than I think people give it credit for. I've always found that, for what I do, I get a lot done these last couple of weeks. Maybe people do spreads because they're bored or whatever, but I tend to get some stuff done, and we've actually had a nice couple of weeks, mainly because we're long gold, but as for how long we take that into the new year, you know, that I don't know, but we will certainly consider that. But what about enough football, Manny? And now the college thing is not till week from Monday. That's kind of wild.
It is, yeah. After they played Friday night or Saturday night to have 9 days between games, or I guess 8 days off, and then you play on the ninth day. That's a long break. But I think it's actually, isn't it 2 weeks? Didn't you say it was
the 16th?
Yeah,
no, or it's
the 13th.
13th, yeah.
Yeah,
16 days.
So they play not. They do not play this coming Monday.
No.
They play the following.
Right. Oh yeah, definitely. It's I'm not so sure. Well, they were supposed to play. They play Christmas Day for these things. Christmas Day, New Year's Day. If the Rose Bowl and the Orange Bowl are involved, correct? And if not,
yeah,
they played. They played a day. They were going to play on Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve, and that was such a fiasco last year.
Right.
They decided to make it to Saturday, but they'd already had a week from Monday locked in because there's no way you could play this Monday after playing essentially on a Wednesday, right? Or a Tuesday night. You wouldn't even have that kind of a turnaround.
Right, but I what I don't understand is why they're not playing on the January 6th.
Because they don't think that.
Because they're saying they would...
The turnaround's too fast.
They would normally play on the 1st, but the turnaround's too fast, so they moved it to the 13th, but then they didn't play on the 1st. They played on December 28th.
Right. But they already locked in a week from Monday.
They already locked in that day.
Which is kind of weird.
It's kind of a cluster, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, that's where that all lands. But the games were... So, let's see. If you even though they lost, which maybe they shouldn't have, but... So if you're an Ohio State person in the northern part of the country, so let's see, you got to go to Michigan for the last game of the year, right?
Correct.
Which
is
okay.
They close their season every other year, either in Columbus or Ann Arbor, but they're not that far apart.
Right. So then you got to go to Indianapolis,
which is also close, but yeah. Still, yeah.
Then you got to you're traveling. Then you got to go to Phoenix.
For this game, yep.
And no,
next
you're week. Out. No, and well, if you're in, then where do you got to go next week? Sugar Bowl. 2 weeks.
Is it in New Orleans?
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe it's in New Orleans. I'm 90% sure. I think it's in New Orleans. So, okay. I mean, it's like, what are you asking these people to do? I would say, I mean, we'll make Kevin do this. He loves doing this stuff anyway. Besides, we do the work. Turns out he probably has already done it. Do you think the average team has made money on this?
The average team? The school?
Well, what do they have to buy? 12, 15,000 tickets?
Yeah, I don't know if they have or not.
You think Ohio State sold out? Iowa State?
No idea.
I mean, the Irish probably did. Although I think I was getting calls.
I can't believe the Notre Dame fans were too excited to go play Iowa State in Orlando or wherever that was. But maybe they were.
And all the commercials were about camping. Like, okay. I'm not so sure the Irish got a big camping crowd, but I don't know. Maybe that was for the Iowa State fans. I shouldn't say that, but they were nice campers.
They sponsored that bowl, Camping World. That's who sponsors that bowl, huh?
Yeah.
I don't even know what that is.
Camping World is a big the RVs, and I think they make stuff, and I don't know. It's a it's like a what do you call it? Bass Pro Shop for camper people, I think. I don't know. You're asking me? I've camped out since college, for God's sake. You know, what does Audrey say? If I can't plug my hairdryer and I'm not going, you know.
Yeah, I'm not a camper either.
I mean, the people who do it love it. My hat's off to them. I sort of see some gorgeous places and stuff. I do it for a night or two with someplace worth doing. I mean, I do, the bottom of the Grand Canyon or something just to see it.
I wouldn't. I have no interest in sleeping in a tent.
Well, I mean, they have cabins down there.
Now, a cabin, I wouldn't call that camping.
Well, I mean, we'd have to lug your stuff either.
Yeah. By the way, you were correct. It is in New Orleans. January 13th, 7 p.m. kickoff. The Mercedes-Benz Superdome in New Orleans.
Supreme Court's past decade could be liberals' last gasp. You know what, Manny? I don't think so. When you say liberals, I don't know what exactly that means. But since I don't know, when we start labeling people these days, I don't think people are as easily labeled as you. You can tell the real conservatives, you can tell the real liberals, I guess. But that leaves you about what, 70% of the population that's not?
Yeah, probably.
I think that they're if the conservatives, if the Mike Pences of the world push the idea that we're going to get every possible young, let's try and get an 18-year-old judge in there that's going to spout our antics for the next 80 years when the rest of the world maybe doesn't believe that way. I'm a behavioral economist. We'll find a way to get them out of there. When I say we, not me, but find a way to get them out of there. Something will happen. If you push things too far, somehow or another, you it doesn't work out for you, no matter what spot you're in. Just the way the world is, in my opinion. If you start doing stuff 30 years from now that nobody agrees with, figure people will find a way. They'll legislate around you. They'll do something to you. Hopefully we're not at the point where we're shooting people. But who knows? We might be getting there. I was reading some stuff this weekend that if they try and take Trump out, there'll be a revolution. Or something. I'm like, what are we doing here? I mean, is it gotten to that? I mean, some of the stuff that I get from my right wingers is absolute vitriol. To where if you don't believe this way, you're a communist. Well, wait a minute. I don't believe that way, and I'm not a communist. So what you just said is wrong. So don't tell me that. You know, it's scary. I don't know. It just seems to me that there's a degradation in a lot of. I've never seen as many head hits in football as since they started having this targeting thing. Where do we find these people? I mean, I don't know if you've had a chance to watch the one in the Oklahoma game.
I did not see much of that game because it was such a blowout so early. I pretty much tuned out.
Well, early on in the game, there's one of the guys in Oklahoma. I think he was one of the better players. The usual. Does everybody have to have dreadlocks now? Not that I'm saying I should. You know, people should dress or look like I do. God, you wouldn't want to do that. But What is the logic in football of having hair hanging out of your helmet? I mean, where is the logic with that?
Well, it is part of the jersey now. If you're on offense, they can tackle you by your long hair, whether it's dreadlocks, as you said, or it's the long hair of the Clemson quarterback. You can get tackled by that, so it wouldn't make a lot of sense as an offensive player. But who cares?
Plus, I have this really, really dumb question is when I used to, you know, play ball every day. I mean, you'd shower up, wash your hair in the morning, and then of course when you played in the afternoon or evening, you'd have to do that all again. How the hell do you do that with dreadlocks? Is that right? Shouldn't I ask that question on here? Or you just don't? Or what, and if you don't, what does that mean?
So I just saw this targeting, and this looks like the ball wasn't even going to this guy,
no.
Was it?
No.
So I'm only seeing like a. Are they
in different gangs in high school or what?
I don't know what's going on here.
For those of you who don't, there was a play. It was early on in the game. One of the receivers for LSU is just kind of wandering out there. The play didn't even come his way. And one of the guys, the defensive backs and Oklahoma, who, you know, I guess he wants to be in the game, he takes about an 8-foot run or maybe 8-yard run at this guy, launches his head right at the guy's face mask, and the guy's not even anywhere near the play. It was no tackle. There was no block. There was no nothing. It was literally an assassination attempt. And he's walking off the field, and all his homies are patting him on the back, and the coaches are patting him on the back. And if I'm the governor of Oklahoma, I got to call down there and say, put that kid on the Greyhound bus. He's not even on the team. I don't want anybody acting like that in an Oklahoma uniform. Have we lost all sense of morality here? I mean, there is absolutely. I'm not talking about a hard tackle trying to, you know, knock the guy's breath out or something. We're talking about, you know, a shot at somebody's head. Do these people even know that? This kid is a college student, and I don't care if he's black or white or blue or whatever it is. I mean, what is going through that kid's mind, and why should he be on anybody's team? Or where am I wrong here?
I have no idea. I'm just reading about this targeting play, but if you're asking why a football player would do a dirty play, football players do dirty plays.
I'm talking about that wide open, knowing what the thing is. People do dirty plays all the time by going to people's legs. I mean, I know they've cut a lot of that stuff back, but the idea that you could potentially paralyze somebody. Why would anybody want that on their conscience? It's one thing to really nail him and have the guy, you know, have a sore shoulder for a week. That's one thing. Quite another to launch your. Plus, you know, everybody's watching. You're out in the middle of. Even if you're an idiot and want to hurt somebody, you can't be that big of an idiot to do it out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I don't know. I assume these two guys were going at it. At this point, it was already 28-7, about to be 35-7. And the kid's frustrated and. Who knows? They're probably talking trash to each other, as a lot of players do. And
can't these people shut up?
Can't who shut up?
Can't these people? One of the guys on Oklahoma, they're down by like 90 points, and the kid makes a catch in the first down, and he can't wait to get in the other guy's face pointing downfield. Can't they just shut up? You know, they must be smarter than me. They have to be smarter than me, Matty. When I used to play handball, you know, tournament handball, when I was, you know, serious stuff or tournament softball. The thought, I had so much to do to concentrate on what I was doing. The idea of concentrating on what I was jabbering at the other guy about. And on a handball court, I can't imagine, you know, getting a really good shot where the guy can't get through it and immediately go, man, can't you get that one? What's the matter? Are you slow? I mean, I can't even imagine doing that. Are these guys' minds that much bigger than mine? They can concentrate on two things? Not only their game, but they can concentrate on And the rap talk or whatever it is, not just all black guys doing it. I mean, it's everybody's doing it. How do you concentrate on what you're doing if that's what you're talking about? And if I'm pitching in softball, that's all I'm worried about is where everybody's playing, what the guy did the last two times up. Why should I have half of my mind worrying about what I'm jabbering to some guy on the sidelines about? I just, you know, I could never do it. I must not be as smart as these guys. It's the only thing I can think of.
I don't know.
Anyway, so that's my view of this. I think they're losing some fans with some of this stuff. And the coaches, why would you pat a guy in the back for targeting a guy?
I can tell you, if I was a coach and I saw that play and, you know, that kid gets thrown out of the game, I wouldn't be patting him on the back. I mean, just watching it, I don't see the whole context of it. I'm not sure. You know, I don't know what led up to it. I don't know. I can't see the whole field on the video. I'm trying to see a video or an article about it with more context. I'm just seeing the actual, like, sort of isolated 3-second video of him doing it. And it looks pretty egregious. I mean, he's clearly, the ball's not coming to him. He goes up right toward his shoulders and head and, just basically blindsides him. And we tweeted it out if you want to look at it, if you didn't see it. It's a pretty bad hit. I mean, you see these in every single game, so to me it's not that big of a deal, but he definitely deserved to get thrown out, and he did.
Then the other game, the game essentially turns on a targeting call that wasn't targeting. Did you see that one?
I did not, no.
Oh, they dig for that while I'm sitting here pontificating. So anywho, we've got, we'll talk pro for a second. Boy, the Eagles are in wounded, right? Very wounded.
Yeah, all their skill players are basically out, and their star tight end was out too.
Yeah, and I don't know. He's rib stuff, so I'm not. So he might be out for a little longer. Well, I bet he'll try and play next week. But the other guys aren't bad either. The backup tight ends.
No, the Eagles obviously won the Super Bowl 2 years ago. Last year they beat the Bears in the playoffs and lost a tough game at New Orleans that they could have won. So they were close to making a deep run in the playoffs again last year. This year they were decimated by injuries and inconsistent play from their quarterback and other players. And then the last few weeks they've turned it on and they caught the Cowboys, beat them head to head, and then they knew they had to win this final game. And they're at the New York Giants, which is a game they're certainly favored in, but a game a lot of people could have seen them lose. I mean, it's not like the Eagles were that great this year. They're finished at 9-7, one game ahead of the Bears. They beat the Bears in Philadelphia in a close game, but they really pulled away in the second half and took it to the Giants and won 34-17, and that was it.
What a pack. You had to do all they could to get out of Detroit.
Yeah, the Packers were down 2 touchdowns most of the way at Detroit against the third-string quarterback of the Lions.
Yeah.
And the Packers had to rally to outscore them by 10 in the fourth quarter to win 23-20 on a field goal. Aaron Rodgers, really struggled, 27 of 55 passing, a sub 50% completion percentage. He did have the 2 touchdowns later in the game.
But they're ready to suit you up to play end up there.
Yeah, they have their number one wide receiver, but other than that, they have no depth there besides Devontae Adams.
I'm stunned at the Cowboys, even though they won yesterday. They look like the Bears, offside, drop passes, just, I don't know if you can call that coaching or people.
They look a lot like the Bears. They both finished 8-8.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I mean, they both had really mediocre seasons in what most people would say too much talent, for their record. The Bears killed the Cowboys head to head, but both look like 8-8 teams to me.
So the good news is the Bears won, so the Oakland won't get as good a draft pick for Khalil Mack.
Right.
So draft's number one is Cincinnati.
I think it's going to be Cincinnati. Yeah, although they won on Sunday, the Bengals are 2-14. So they'll have the number one pick, and then Lions and Redskins. It would be the Redskins with the number two pick at 3-13. The Lions 3-12-1 look like they would be the number three pick.
So the kid from LSU maybe going to go number one.
I think he's definitely going to go number one. Joe Burrow, the just electric quarterback, 7 touchdown passes in the first half alone for LSU against an Oklahoma team.
And he can run.
Yeah, against an Oklahoma team that's got a ton of draft picks on that defense, even though they're not.
You know what, they didn't have much of a defense all year.
They're not known for defense, but it's not like they don't have good players.
True.
And LSU just shredded them in every possible way. Guys were open all over the field. That quarterback just puts it on you anywhere, deep, side to side. The guy's unbelievable. And the fact that he was originally at Ohio State and he's an Ohio kid and transferred because he couldn't get any playing time at Ohio State and now he's going to be the number one overall pick is pretty funny.
Yeah. What do you suppose, with all their money, I'm not so sure that it's correct, actually, if you count how much money people have to pay to, quote, get tickets at some places, but allegedly Texas still has by far the most profitable program. And why do they continue to have problems getting people, and yet Oklahoma seems to get them? I mean, I'd much rather go to Texas than Oklahoma, for God's sake.
I would too. I'd much rather go to Austin, Texas. Is a great town.
Yeah,
and great resources there at that university, and certainly better than Norman, Oklahoma, in my opinion, which is right outside of Oklahoma City. And Oklahoma City is just like a cow town, if you've ever been there. But I don't. It's a great question. Texas. It's all about coaching. It's all about recruiting. And Oklahoma has had the upper hand for the last 15 years over Texas completely. And not only in just football, but in basketball, too. They just kind of own Texas, and most of their players are from Texas.
Yeah, well, that used to be the big one of the biggest rivalries. They always would say, Notre Dame Southern Cal, which clearly is. But Oklahoma-Texas, where they always played it on allegedly a neutral spot.
They still, yeah. They play in Dallas every year, the Red River Shootout.
Yeah, which really isn't much of a neutral spot. But
why is that?
Dallas is in Texas, last time I checked.
Well, I know that, but the stadium is divided in half, half red, half orange. It's about as – I think it's the drive is like halfway between Oklahoma City and Austin.
I thought Oklahoma was in Norman.
It is.
You said Oklahoma City.
Well, Norman is like right outside of Oklahoma
City. Oh, okay.
City.
I thought it was
further away. It's like a suburb.
I didn't think, when I drove through Oklahoma City, I didn't think they had suburbs.
Well, they kind of don't.
Matter of fact, when I was driving my truck back from Tucson, I'm like in the middle of nowhere at 5 in the morning. All of a sudden, I see this sign, Oklahoma City City Limits. So I was like going through Manteno. Maybe it wasn't that far, but clearly they annexed out far enough that there's not going to be an Oak Park or anything around there.
Yeah, Norman is 20 miles south of Oklahoma City.
Okay.
It's like...
It must be just over the border.
It's like closer than, the western suburbs of Chicago.
Okay.
It's all right there. And, Oklahoma City's got a big population, and so they get some kids from there, but they get a lot of their kids from Texas.
Well, the guys from, LSU, you see what's happening in some of these teams, and it's the different styles. They talked about the defensive line in LSU. And they're saying the average is 6'3", 321. And they show these two guys, and they are clinically obese, both of them, without any question. They're big, fat.
I'd say if you're 321, you'd be clinically obese.
And they're talking about how they have such depth that they don't even have to play like... Let me get this straight. There's 11 and a half minutes of action in a football game. So that means the offense... Well, if you don't even count special teams, the offense and the defense each play 5 minutes. So you can't play 5 minutes? You can't. I mean, what do you suppose if those guys had to run like 300-yard sprints? I mean, what are we doing?
Why would they have to run 300-yard sprints?
I mean, that's what people used to do all the time in football. When I played grammar school football, you did is run every practice.
Yeah, we ran a lot, that's for sure.
I mean, even the linemen, though, it didn't matter. I mean, these guys, I don't... And yet you watch San Francisco... And their defensive line is lean and mean. There's no fatsos there. Like Bosa kid looks like he's a sprinter, for God's sake.
The defensive ends, no doubt about it, are just sprinters almost. They look like taller linebackers.
Yeah.
But inside you is where you have big guys.
You don't see too many Ted Washington and stuff around anymore. You see a
no,
few.
No, not a ton.
I mean, the kid on the Bears is, but he's not a big fatso. He's just big. Hicks. I mean, I don't consider that guy, but it is interesting the sports. If Phil felt offered a guy the plane that went down, with these coordinators'
the daughter-in-law, offensive coordinator's daughter-in-law, yeah.
Well, four other people too that nobody cared
five
about.
Five people, five people on a plane from Lafayette or something,
yeah, heading for the game.
Yeah,
but there's it was kind of fun watching it. There was pretty good football. We had a lot of bad games, Bears being one of them.
The Bears game you could just tell, obviously, it was a game that didn't matter. The Bears are playing their starters, but they have no chance of making the playoffs. The Vikings have no chance of moving up a seed or down a seed.
You don't think so?
No, they didn't. They were locked into the sixth
spot. I know, but I'm saying, like you said, they aren't going to have a chance to playoffs. I think they might. Playing Green Bay for the third time.
No, I don't think they play Green Bay now.
Yeah.
Because I thought they would play Green Bay if Green Bay lost.
Oh, maybe. That's right. Green Bay's got the bye now.
Yeah.
So who do they play?
I don't know if they play New Orleans. Let me see.
I think they might have to go to New Orleans.
I'll see if I can find it here.
So it's Green Bay and San Francisco got the bye. They must have to go to New Orleans. They're the last seed.
Yeah, so the divisional round will be Buffalo at Houston and then Tennessee at New England on Saturday. And then Sunday will be the NFC games. It'll be Minnesota at New Orleans and Seattle at Philadelphia. So Philadelphia gets to host a playoff game at 9-7, which is always hilarious.
Well, I mean, you can't if you're wild card, you can't host, right? The first
round. Oh, yeah. Division winner gets to host it.
You could conceivably host the second game, though, right?
As a wild card,
yeah,
conceivably, yeah. If you have a better record than the other wild card,
if both wild cards
they both
won.
Have to win. Yeah,
both have to win. SP Futures up 250, Dow Futures up 16, NASDAQ Futures up 5.25. Come back with Mr. John Flanagan, talk a little end of year politics affecting the market, and we'll see where the rates are going and a bunch of other stuff we'll talk about. I'll be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. It's Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 275. NASDAQ Futures up 6. Dow Futures up 18 over in Europe. We've got the DAX down 70. 0.5%, FTSE down 28.4%, CAC around down 15.2%, so a little bit of movement over there. Nikkei down 181.7%, Shanghai up 34, 1.1%, Hang Seng up 93.3%, so a little bit of movement. 10-year bond, 1.91, right where it's been. The bond, wow, under minus, over minus 0.20, it's hard for me to do this negative stuff, at minus 0.19, Japan minus 0.02, still can't get to zero, but hanging very, very close. We've got oil up 38 cents, 62.10. Brent up 71 cents, 68.87. We've got gold down 340. Still kind of at a lofty, 15.14. Silver 17.91. Copper 282. Platinum 9.55. So not much going, there. The, dollar is sneaking down a little bit. And the U.S. had, a couple of strikes in Iraq and Syria. I wonder what the map over there even looks like. That would be something to see. Manny, we got for us Traffic Weather Sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a pretty good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways, although there is some slick conditions out there after a lot of rain last night and the temperatures dropping overnight and into today. There could be some slick and icy roads, especially on some of the off-ramps and bridges. But no issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Still a lot of people apparently off of work this week due to New Year's being this week. So light traffic volumes on the Edens and Kennedy. Same for the Eisenhower-Stevenson Southside Expressway is looking good. Off the expressways, it looks like we have a crash on Lakeshore Drive northbound at Wilson Avenue on the north side. So that's causing a bit of a delay. And then out in Carroll Stream, Gary Avenue at Elk Trail, there is a crash. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, falling temperatures, could have some rain and sleet mix. A high of 36 today, which is where we're at right now. So we'll hover right around the freezing mark for most of the day and could have precipitation in the area that could lead to some slick conditions. So keep that in mind. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 59. Right now it's clear and 37. In sports, as we touched on, the Bears topped the Vikings 21-19 up in Minnesota. Their fourth straight win over the Vikings, although yesterday was a meaningless game with the Vikings resting their starters and the Bears out of playoff contention. But
Eddie, it meant a lot to all kinds of people. Didn't you listen to Joni there?
It did if you bet on it. Bears had an 18-6 lead, blew that lead, and then rallied down the field and set up for a game-winning field goal from Eddie Pinheiro, who nailed a chip shot field goal with 10 seconds left to top the Vikings. Bears finish a disappointing 2019 season at 8-8, missing the playoffs. Arizona Cardinals finished out their season losing at the Rams 31-24. Sunday Night Football last night, it was the 49ers over the Seahawks 26-21. In hockey, Blackhawks beat Columbus 3-2 in a shootout. Blackhawks have won two in a row. Coyotes were doubled up by the Stars 4-2. College hoops, Illinois blew out North Carolina A&T 95-64. It was Notre Dame having no issue at all with Alabama A&M 82-56. And Northwestern Chief lost a one-point heartbreaker to Hartford at home in Evanston 67-66. Northwestern pays Hartford to come play. They don't expect Hartford to beat them, but that's exactly what happened, 67-66. Chief.
So let's see. Hey, Jan, how are you?
Good, Tom. How about you?
I'm doing fine. I'm just sitting here trying to visualize the phone call where, like, the athletic director of where? The Irish call Alabama A&M. Why you and say, we need a chomp. You guys want to be our chomp. Or does the guy from Alabama A&M call up and say, we understand you're looking for a chomp. We'd be happy to come on up there.
Yep. We'd like to bask in your glow.
Yeah, we'd like to do something out in the middle of a January in South Bend. Why, God.
I like the idea of Northwestern saying, yeah, Hartford, come play us. Yeah. We're going to do a Sunday game and afternoon game. And, you know, should be fun. We'll have a decent crowd there. And then Hartford comes in and beats them. That's what I like.
What was the movie
strange
with...
strange kind of synergy, yes.
What was the movie with... what's his name? The guy who was always getting stabbed or something. It was a Braveheart guy. He was the gladiator. His first thing in the gladiators, they were supposed to be the Carthaginians and the fighting the Romans. Then he was there and he staked them all out and they managed to get some of the weapons. So they ended up beating the Romans and the emperor goes something like, wow, what a great performance. And the guy goes, yeah, but weren't the Carthaginians supposed to lose? Didn't the Romans win that battle? Well, they didn't win that particular one. Anyway, Jan, why are we just, I don't want to get into politics too heavy here because we want to talk a lot next year in the market more. Why are we worried about stuff like what happened in the Ukraine when last week the guy tweets something out where he outs a whistleblower, which is against laws on both sides of the aisle. Want to protect whistleblower, and a guy retweets the name of a whistleblower. Why can't we just use that to throw him out? Why do we need this whole routine about the Ukraine? And of course somebody must have talked to him and said you can't do that, so he pulls the tweet back. Now is that public now or what? I'm not a tweet guy.
It started out in a Washington Examiner article, so I think it had already been disclosed. It wasn't as if it was leaked in the tweet. tweet. I think it retweeted a headline or an article, I think, but I have to go back and look. But you know, it's kind of what you were talking about earlier with Maddie about the general degradation of things, that everything is now so unfiltered. And you know, you look at what tweeting has done to deliberative thought. It's just get it out there, get it, you know, see what sticks, throw stuff around, break things up, you know, as much as you can, and then see what happens after the dust has a chance to settle a little bit, and then you start, you know, slinging some more stuff. And it's visible in sports, it's visible certainly and audible in politics, and it's kind of, it's annoying as heck, and it's destroying the kind of culture of respect and, you know, kind of, taking things slowly and thinking about them before you respond just glibly or spasmodically. So I'm really upset, you know, that the Twitter has just, I think, kind of destroyed any sort of discussion. It just inflame. It's meant to inflame, and it starts.
Well, you guys, work me through this, you two gentlemen, because obviously, Jan, you know more about it, and Maddie's sort of in the business. Me, I'll explain why I'm a Luddite. Obviously, Maddie tweets out for the show. Me personally, I don't tweet out at all because as a registered guy with about, you know, 90 different, well, I won't say 90, I'll say 5 or 6, 7-3, 63, there's a whole list of stuff I am. If I tweet out stuff, it would be considered most of the time communication to customers. So, it's not something you necessarily want to do if you're in a business. Okay, and because everybody knows when I'm on the air, I'm very careful to not give investment advice to individuals, and I don't really talk about specific stocks that much other than I kind of like this one or don't, which anybody can say, but I would never, you're never going to catch me saying, somebody calling in and saying, should I sell my IBM? I'm going to go, wait a minute. I need to see you. I need to see your portfolio, anything like that. So Twitter, in the minds of our, I won't say geniuses, I'll say people at FINRA and the SEC and so forth, is another way of communicating to clients, so you have to be careful what you say. So, simple way to not do that is to not say anything. So here I'm reading this stuff, and I'm thinking, where are Jan and Maddie when I need them? This is when I put the Bear game on pause yesterday. Just before midnight Friday, Trump retweeted a message from Twitter user SurferMom77, an account that claims to be a woman named Sophia who lives in California. The account shows some indications of automation, whatever the hell that means, indicating an unusually high amount of activity in profile pictures featuring stock images from the internet. In other words, not anybody really named Sophia walking along in a bathing suit. So they're talking about this thing has, you know, hundreds of tweets a day, which most normal people don't do. What does this even mean? Either one of you guys. I mean, they have an automated Twitter site. How does that work?
Well, I wonder if it's, you know, automatically generated, you know, phrases or strung together comments. It could be done by an algorithm. It wouldn't even have to have an author as such. It just you know, pulls stuff out of other feeds, combines it, puts in punctuation, and throws it out again. So it sort of has that feel sometimes to me that there really hasn't been an author's, you know, mind behind this or any attempt to edit it or think about its impact. So
explain to me. This is, I'm sure, this is non-denominational. I'm sure there's some of these on the other side. SurferMom7, this is out of, by the way, when I do this, a few knuckleheads left on Earth. It's a CNBC article. Let me get the author. Or if it has an author. It just says published, and they don't even throw an offer on there. That's even more bizarre. They don't put somebody's name on it. How the hell is that? How do you print something? It doesn't say Associated Press or anything. Anyway, where am I? SurferMom77. The Twitter handle on the post Trump retweeted describes herself as 100% Trump supporter and California resident. The account has, now get a load of this, if it's an automated account, there's not even a person there. The account had nearly 79,000 idiots, I mean, I didn't say, that's an editorial comment, idiots followers as of Saturday afternoon. Some of its previous posts have denounced Islam and have sharply criticized former President Barack Obama and other Democrats. SurferMom77 has displayed some hallmarks of a Twitter bot. What the hell does that mean? An automated account. A recent profile picture on the account, for instance, a stock photo of a woman in a business attire that is available for use online. That photo was removed Saturday, replaced with an image of Trump. How does a bozo automated account generate, have 79,000 idiots listening to it?
I think it kind of shows the appetite for the sort of rage and, you know, crazy discussion that's being thrown around, and it creates a stir, and it inflames passions, and it makes people think less and rage more, and that's always bad. I follow a couple feeds on Twitter. I don't post anything because I think it's a dangerous phenomenon to me that the stories or rumors get out of control and do a lot of damage. And there's a recklessness about it that really bothers me.
72 tweets a day.
I don't know how you can get anything else done if you're really thinking about what you're writing. You know.
170,000 tweets since 2013. That's a lot.
Yeah, not my style at all. You know,
John, I was thinking of you. Next time I was going to talk to you, actually, I don't know if we talked about it last week, the Christmas of 49, when people were so worried about getting coal and heating their house. Is it just people have more time now on their hands because you don't have to, I won't say have to work as hard, because sometimes people work way more longer hours than they used to, but is there just, what is causing the fact that people have hours a day to hate people they don't even ever even met? I mean, there's something going on here. I mean, it seems like when people spent all day just trying to survive, at least you knew what they were doing, trying to survive. I'm not saying it was better when people have anything to eat or heat. I don't think it was better at all. I don't think it was better when you didn't have the medicine wasn't as good as it is now. I mean, I'm not into that crap at all. But the idea that people actually have time to do this, to dig around for everything I get from somebody is never left or right. I get more from the right because I guess they must think I'm left or something. I get more from the right, but there's very little original work. If you get one piece of paper from somewhere, you can tell the next 10 people all wrote off the same thing. The facts are exactly the same. There's a starter point someplace, and I don't know who the starter point is. And I'm sure on the left it's the same way. No, nothing's researched by anybody.
No, it's like, you know, a game of telephone, and stuff gets, you know, inflated and amplified the more it's passed around. And people, I think, you know, glomp onto things just because they see their own, you know, preconceptions or their prejudices confirmed, so they are, you know, anxious to get it out there and add their name to it somehow and think that they've accomplished something. So, well, there was a story about Thomas Jefferson. You know, when he was really infuriated with something somebody did, he'd write a letter to the person, and then he'd read it over and then tear up the letter, and then he'd write the letter again and read it and then tear it up, and then he'd wait a while, and then he'd write a third letter that he'd finally mail. Because by then he had worked out all of his rage, and he really now could dispassionately say what was on his mind. But that isn't encouraged today. It's not even possible today to do that.
Well, the one guy, when the Twitter first started, I remember the guy on CNBC, I like him, Tyler, I forget his last name, Tyler Matthews or Matheson, I don't know. He's been on it forever. And he goes, after last weekend, I made a new rule, no tweets after drinks or something like that. Not a bad idea.
You should put a breathalyzer thing next to the camera on Skype.
Well, that's, you know, no tweets went on the can or something. But your buddy Warren Buffett said something the same way. I was listening to him on years ago, and he goes, "If somebody pisses you off, you always reserve the right to call him a son of a bitch tomorrow. You don't have to do it today. If you still feel that way tomorrow, feel free." There's something we said.
You know, there's just so little room for conciliation and negotiation, you could see it in the recent Chicago teacher strike and the digging in that people, you know, when they think they're opposed to somebody or some position, it isn't about finding solutions. It's not about tamping down the noise or the rhetoric. It's about screaming and yelling to a bigger audience and getting more people to scream along with you, and eventually people just get tired of it, and somebody buckles or somebody just gives up, and that isn't really good for a long-term solution to any problem. And it's contaminated politics, local and national, international, and I see it as just getting worse. I don't see any turnaround in the near future. There's no room or respect for thoughtfulness or quiet contemplation or meditation or anything. It's just like, get it out there now. It's what you're talking about with sports, you know, and dirty hits and stuff, too. It's like, let's just see what we can get away with, and we'll worry about the outcome later.
So. Oh, yeah. Can you think, Jan, it's possible? I mean, obviously, you and I are both thinking, even though we're not politically totally on the same page, is there some way that somebody can bring it back? Can the right leader at least bring it back? I mean, I really thought that how can I say this politically correctly? I probably can't. That during the teacher's strike, I thought the teachers were amazingly, I don't know if, did they ever let the white people talk? Because I know there's an awful lot of white teachers and there's Asian teachers and everything. But it comes across as an absolutely total black against other people thing. Or am I wrong there?
Well, that's I think the way the, you know, the figureheads were chosen when they'd have press conferences or statements or even press, you know, when the TV stations would be covering people on the picket lines. That was the impression. But
I know it's not the true.
The teachers' union is much more white than it ever used to.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, what I'm saying is the terms of the communication, again, you're more into this than me, but the communication, the message, the entire way they went about it, to me, absolutely sucked if you wanted to win friends and influence people.
Oh, I agree.
They couldn't have done a worse job. Now, whether or not in this day and age, I mean, I know that I'm accused of being a Luddite a lot, but in this day and age, I know it's not St. John Fisher with five or six indirect people for 34 teachers. I know that's not today's world. That when you have, if I was a teacher and I had a feeling that out of my 25 students, 15 of them were on some kind of drug, I would want a nurse in the school. Because I'm not the doctor. I don't, if somebody took too much or too little or whatever, I gotta have somebody who knows what they're talking about, talk to the kid. It's not my game. I mean, I know what I can do and that's not it. I mean, and I don't know that first of all, I could say we weren't drugged because the drugs weren't around. The only drug I remember is I had tonsillitis. I got a penicillin shot in the ass and they hurt like hell. But that was my idea of a drug, right? I mean,
high off of that.
No. Yeah, no high off of that. And, you have to understand, but I don't even have to because obviously they didn't. When you're preaching to people in some incredibly preacher kind of voice, how much money you deserve, you at least should have the sense to figure out the people you're preaching to, when's the last time they got a raise. If the answer is like never, your message needs to change just a hair. Just a hair. I think. I mean, if I was running for office or you were, you can't give the same speech everywhere if you're gonna, if you think all these pensions have to be cut, which I firmly believe in, by the way, at least the screwing around in them, maybe not the standard pension the regular person gets. I mean, my first three speeches, probably if the fire department, police department, and public schools, you know, aren't gonna go over so big. Just saying. They might go over like a fart in church, basically, right? You sort of have to remember who you're talking to. And I mean, these people today, have any idea that if you put a chart up of the last, since 2000, the raises of school teachers versus other people, it's not even on the same planet.
No, these people were like inside a bubble.
Yeah.
In my way of thinking, they really had no clue that the stuff they were asking for translated to huge tax increases for people who didn't have kids in the schools, or you know, their kids that graduated from schools, you know, 20, 30 years ago. They didn't really have any kind of stake in it anymore, and they were just trying to hang out of their house and their livelihood. And here you got people making these sweeping demands. You know, it's only another $400 million. Well, that's
a real number.
Beyond reckless. I mean, you can't expect people to nod their heads and say, sure, where do I sign? that just showed such tone deafness that I thought, this is your negotiating team? These are your spokespeople? And you don't have a better message than this? How do you expect to win this in the hearts and minds of Chicagoans? I was aghast.
Well, John, how do you, the other part that came out, and this is again, not something I would ever accuse the teachers of, but they also, to me, failed to point it out. Didn't it become obvious that, a lot of the social stuff that's going down in the neighborhood is somehow going through the school budget? I mean, for instance, if you had a public school and a park next to it, with a, you know, a nice big, say, they don't all have, but say you had a nice big park house, I'm not so sure that the after school, you know, quasi dinner program for kids that don't have dinner so much at home needs to be in the school budget. I think it should be elsewhere, and probably, I mean, obviously the schools have the kitchens and they have the capability of doing that. Why is that in the school budget? That's
right. I mean, it's to me, it's essentially a charitable enterprise.
Well, and that, maybe it's necessary, but
right. And yes. And there's certainly a need, and I think there's always been a need for, you know, food pantries and soup kitchens and treating hunger as, you know, something that people won't admit to sometimes, but they need a square meal and they don't know where to get it from. They don't have the money for it. But I don't think it's this Board of Education's responsibility to supply those meals. That's always rubbed me the wrong way. And I think there's tremendous fraud in that too. People are getting lunches based on some, you know, poverty index that they've twisted or misrepresented. So you got the taxpayers funding, you know, other families' food budgets. That is just rolled in as a tax, as some expense that the schools have to assume, and I don't really buy that.
Well, I think if they're going to feed all the kids because they have no lunch at home, I don't really have a problem with that. I just don't. I think it should not come from the school budget.
Oh, right. It masks the
right.
The real cost of
yes.
the problem, and it gives the schools more opportunities to waste money or
inflate. Well, it gives them a bad name. It ups their budget when it's not anything regarding what they're doing.
Right. Oh, yeah. I'm with you on that. That's always bothered me a lot, and it's become pervasive where it's just expected now that, you know, every school has a menu that is just tailored to, you know, whatever the particular prejudice or, you know, against certain foods or for certain foods, and it's constantly tweaking it. And it's never presented as something that really is optional at best. And why are the schools even worried about this?
Well, the world has changed.
Just accepted. So,
what percentage of kids in your school? Again, Jan and I, you know, went through. Well, I won't say it was the lap of luxury Catholic school because it was not very luxurious. It was very, very cheap. How many kids? I'm going to say out of 1,600 kids, maybe 30 stayed for lunch, and you had to have an ironclad excuse from your mother that, you know, somebody died, somebody had to work. Because whenever my mom wasn't around, he went to the neighbor's house or vice versa. I mean, they were really into everybody goes home for lunch. I mean, I know that's impossible and we were taking buses and stuff to school, but it was a different world. But, none of that happens now. I mean, nobody has lunch at home.
No. We had 1,000 kids in my grade school, and the only kids who were allowed to eat in the school hall after bringing their own lunch, you know, the school provided nothing. There were no vending machines, no nothing. You had to live a certain number of blocks away from
okay.
the school because the parish was shaped very oddly, and it was a long trek for some students. They just couldn't have made it home and back in the hour that
you were St. Barnabas?
St. Felicitas, over on the southeast side.
Oh, okay, you moved to Beverly later then, okay.
Yeah, right after I graduated from St. Felicitas, we moved to Beverly that summer. But I never, you know, had a lunch during grade school that I didn't eat at home every day.
We did. I mean, I was there 2 days when my aunt died. My mom had to leave, and you know, you could get chocolate milk. Was it? Well, you brought your own. You brought your own PB&J. SP Futures up 2. NASDAQ Futures up 350. Be right back.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Something happening here.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe, Mr. Mel on the board. Mr. Jeff Flanagan coming in by phone. S&P futures up $1.75. NASDAQ futures up 1.25. Very sleepy after the big football weekend. Hey, box office weekend. As we see, as you know, I'm always railing against combinations. If you account if you count in Time Warner that they just bought, Disney is now 38% of the total box office for the year. Comments, opinions?
38%?
Yep.
Wow.
That's a number.
That's enormous.
Matt Weber, closest competitor, who and how much?
I don't know. Does Disney own Marvel?
Yeah, they do, don't they?
I have no idea.
Don't they own, they own Spider-Man, right? That's them? I mean, I'm not positive on that. David will know. We'll get him on there. I think they did buy Marvel.
Yeah, it looks like on August 31st, 2009, Disney Company announced a deal to acquire Marvel Entertainment. Well, that's where all that percentage is coming from, all the superhero movies, right?
Well, it picked up another 5% from Time Warner because there were 33 without them, and they just bought them last year, right, or this year, or closed this year. Closest competitor is Warner Brothers, accounted for 13.8%.
That's a big difference.
Big difference, yeah. It's a...
And Disney has such an advantage to start because they have this intergenerational appeal going back, 80 years, with, their animated films that were revolutionary. And they got generations of people to follow them, and they can remake them now and, put new musical scores to them and get new voiceovers, and people will plunk down their money and see the new version of it. Because they have such good feelings about the previous ones, so that's a huge advantage in this kind of a market.
Well, when people ask you, as we're coming up on, well, not that close to it, but we're coming up on Oscar season, people will always give you the tidbits of, who won the most Oscars, who did this and that, and the name they never even talk about because he won so damn many of them was Walt Disney. What did he win, like 25?
Oh yeah, for lots of different things.
Yeah,
animation. The scores that he commissioned.
Yeah.
If you add in the actors.
No, I'm talking about technical Walt Disney himself. Walt Disney himself when he was actually creating them.
Oh yeah, Walt Disney himself too, right?
Yeah. I mean, dig that. I might be wrong, but it's way up there. I mean, for just by all the different stuff they did on the storyboards and everything. I mean, and for advancements on this, that. I mean, the stuff they don't even hear about. People wouldn't ask Oscars for, but. Hey, how about that for a segue into this weekend, since there were so many football games on that I couldn't wait to hit the pause button. Is it just me, or were the two college games, were they like 4 hours apiece?
I mean, at least.
Yeah.
From what I could tell, I wasn't following them closely, but I check in and see what was going on. I thought, well, it's still going on.
Yeah, I wonder if Kevin made it the whole way. I bet he did. He had nice seats and everything for the Ohio State game. But anyway, he got tickets on the mezzanine for like way less than face, John, I think, down in Arizona. I don't think it's hard to get into these games.
Well, it's the same thing in the NFL too. I mean, I think attendance certainly was way off, season after season. And one of the problems is that the games are so lengthy. A lot of standing around, a lot of downtime with the TV sticking its nose in. People don't have that kind of time. And then you factor in the commuting and the parking and walking and all that before and after. It takes a certain kind of fan that will do that on a regular basis. And I think people are finding other ways to amuse themselves.
Well, I was was anxious to talk to you regarding memories of the 70s and 80s. Not that we have to go down memory lane for our listeners like I do too much of.
Always fun, though.
Well, I was looking for, I've been ragging on the Fed big time with the money and stuff that they're pouring into the system, because I'm concerned they're not as afraid about the disaster that was the late 60s into the 70s into the 80s with the inflation, the stagflation, and all the other stuff. I thought we had buried the word stagflation forever, but I think we're about to resurrect it, although I hate like hell. It's like using the word in golf, shank. You can't bring it out. As soon as you say shank, everybody starts shanking type of thing. And you're not a golfer, so you don't know what I'm talking about. But so I went back and I put my TV, if you hit the pause, you got 30 minutes to go do something before it goes on again by itself. I've got TiVo. TiVo's not as good as the other stuff, but anyway, it works. So I was digging back on all these definitive papers from the Fed and everything, on the history of the 70s inflation, how it happened, and how they could have done better and everything. And Jan, I'm reading this stuff, and I am stunned. Now, of course, being a disciple of the Friedman School or the Manitou School in the University of Chicago, to me, it's very simple. Too much money chasing too many goods. And it's, you know, Milton Friedman's where, you know, inflation is always and every time, or something like that, a monetary phenomenon. Right? And yet, I'm reading these definitive papers, Arthur Burns, who was convinced it was caused by the labor unions demanding too much wages. So whenever they got a raise, he had to put more money into the system to stop the economy going in a rat hole, because all of a sudden people couldn't raise prices because people are going to be paid too much and nobody. I mean, I'm like, what is he talking about? These are written by PhDs, and one of them's got all. He lost me in the calculus of it. How could there be calculus to that? I mean, anybody who, if you were old enough to remember the whole system, and I'm just running my knowledge of it through you, the inflation started, I'm going to say early 70s. It coincided with the oil embargo, but it really started when we went off the gold standard to pay for the Vietnam War and started pouring money into the system. And then we had
wage and price controls. Which, if you think about it, I mean, if that were floated today, that people would be, you know, absolutely apoplectic. But that back then, that just seemed like, you know, an absolutely normal solution to a pretty frightening problem. I look back on that now and think, boy, you know, between like 1971 and 1976, things just seem to be careening out of control. And yet, when I look back too, I think nothing was really out of reach, or prices weren't exploding visibly. Things like gas, of course, was, you know, extremely expensive and scarce at times. But by and large, you know, rents didn't explode, car prices didn't explode, and, you know, cars began to ratchet down in size and gas consumption. There was some good paybacks from it, but clearly, I think it was Vietnam. It was, you know, hiding the real cost of the war, I think, in terms of blood and money. And that just threw the whole economy out of whack. It took a while for it to catch up, I think.
Well,
I didn't really see that at the time, very clearly.
Well, that we're same thing we're doing now. We're pouring money into to pay for the debt for the wars.
Right. I mean, the wars now are longer and they're more insidious because they're not on the evening news every night, and people don't get furious about, you know, the wastage of life on both sides of the conflict, or let alone the money and the long-term indebtedness, you know, to China for financing this crazy stuff. So it's something that the average person doesn't think very much about, and that was different in the Vietnam era. You couldn't escape it. But it, you know, it took a long time for that to snowball and to create. Remember the little WIN buttons, whip inflation now?
Oh, yeah,
forward?
Yeah.
You're supposed to wear this, you know, on your coat walking around downtown, and that was supposed to fix something somehow, I guess.
Well, it is stunning that the people who were in power, and they were conservative, I'll say the Arthur Burns, Cheney, Rumsfeld class, you know. Doesn't make them all Republicans. There are a lot of guys like that were Democrats, but that whole old white guy group that had their own stuff, and they were so anti-union they couldn't, you know, they were like the people today. I mean, it had to be the union's fault, right? For them to have gotten a raise, it must have been ill-gotten that they beat up on some poor owner somewhere and got this raise, right?
Yeah, that was the mantra.
Yeah, that was the mantra.
I was a union person. I was always very offended by that.
Well, but the whole thing, and as I recall, it wasn't like the union guys had enough power where you went down to the gas station and you bought some bread and said, "Hey, this crap's up 10%. I'm walking in and getting a new contract tomorrow." That didn't happen. It was only when the inflation was well entrenched, and somebody came to the contract and said, "Look, we'll sign up for $6 an hour or $10 an hour, but we know full well at the end of the year it's going to be worth $9, the way things are going. So since you guys are raising prices every year, guess what? That's going to have to filter down to our contract."
Right.
And once it was happening, you really couldn't argue with it, right? But for anybody to say that that's what started it and that's what caused it, I mean, what books are they reading, John? I mean, that's not what happened. I mean, the inflation started long before the inflation clauses got in the contracts.
you know, there was a big explosion in government, you know, mission creep in the 60s, you know, under Johnson, and it continued under Nixon when you know, the EPA and yeah. things we think of today is, you know, anathema to people like Trump, but they were, you know, really got their start under Republican administrations. That exploded the power and the ability of the federal government to pull money into the system and, you know, create controls, standards, regulations that in many cases had a dampening effect on the economy. But, you know, you had the engine of the government that was sucking money in at a greater rate than ever, and the payback at the other end was less and less apparent to the average person. So there was a kind of, you know, and this became the norm, you know, for government, and it's been the norm ever since.
I would agree. You know, what's interesting, John, is that I would say that if you never know when you ask economists, I'm going to say one of the dumbest ideas economically ever in the history of the U.S. was the wage and price controls. Because, of course, they're just like Trumpy's tariffs. There were so many exceptions to people that if you knew somebody, you didn't have to worry about it, right?
Like, yes.
Plus, there was the highest price. Maddie, was so bizarre. The price control on gas. Say gas was $1.40 a gallon. The price control price would be like $1.60. So in competitive industries, you never got to the competitive price was usually lower than the price control price because
yeah.
they were still competitive. I mean, it just showed you that the places that weren't competitive, the places that were, well. I believe if you went back and looked, I mean, we've had some hell of rallies in the last few years, but in percentage terms, I'm going to say still the 3-day rally after the wage and price controls was announced is in the top 4 or 5, maybe the top 2 or 3 of all 3-day rallies percentage-wise. And just goes to show you, don't just because the market goes up on some idea of a president, Democrat or Republican, don't assume that it's a good idea.
Yeah, beware those short rallies.
Yeah.
People are responding to something they haven't had the time to kind of process or think about long term.
I'm gonna clean this up as best I can. My boss at Allied Van Lines, Bob Sigler, the guy was one of the first guys taking the executive program here in Chicago. He was right after my stepfather. I think my stepfather had to be like the first class. Anyway, so Bob is in, and of those things on Friday, of course, they'd go and they'd get their teaching for the day and they'd all go out drinking with the professors at night, right? Because they're all the same age, right? So they're in this cab, him and two other guys with Walter Fackler, who is the dean of the business school. And he's already lit up his huge cigar in a cab, right? So they're heading over to Martini's for, guess what? Martini's. And, so one of the guys says, Dean Fackler, what do you think of Nixon's, wage price controls? So he pulls a cigar out and he gives it a big, you know. Boys, let me tell you, wage price controls did for the economy to what pantyhose did to bleep bleeping. These guys are like, you said what? You know, hey, he goes, we could have been the worst idea like ever. You know, I mean, but Nixon handsome, you know, I to this day, I mean, talk about a non-Republican thing, his idea of the negative income tax, I thought was genius. To this day. I don't know if you remember that at all.
Oh, yeah, yeah. To have it come from Nixon. I mean,
yeah.
The things that Nixon is remembered for are the things that you never thought Nixon was capable of doing, you know, given who Nixon had been as vice president, and he continued to be. So you're opening up China and, you know, trying to end the Vietnam War after inflating it. All of these things were, you know, like, this is Nixon? There's a strange kind of disjunct there. So
there wasn't anywhere near the difference between the Dems and Republicans back then.
No.
In terms of fiscal. I mean, Kennedy and Nixon would have the same budget. There was no. The thing that I think that influenced Nixon was. Wasn't Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty? You know, I'll say this all the time. If you would have taken the amount of money, it's like a couple of weeks ago, I was talking about the guys who are under the bridge. All they need to sleep inside for a night is $19, and we're going to have probably some bazillion dollar, you know, program to where maybe the $19 will get down to the guy who's going to get the flop, right? But with Johnson's War on Poverty, if you would take the amount of money they spent, divide it by the amount of poor people and send them a check, you wouldn't have had any poor people, at least for a while. Now, obviously, there's a moral hazard with that, and I'm not saying I'd recommend that, but just that's where the math takes you, right? And so, and at the end of the day, at the end of the War on Poverty, with all this money gone, and I think the only thing left out of any one of those policies, John, is Head Start. Is that correct? And so just fast forward, you know, a few years, and Nixon's like, okay, we spent all this dough, and we didn't get anything out of it, and look how all the people got rich in the meantime, which is the Democratic, you know, Achilles heel, is all the people along the way get the money and never makes it to where they want it to go, right? I mean, that's a Democratic problem, and I've been a Democrat most of my life, and that's the problem. I mean, it's not like I ignore it. So Nixon said, well, let's not do that. Let's just say if you didn't make any money last year, we're sent, you know, I think at the time, John, it was like $2,000 or something. It wasn't a whole hell of a lot, but it was something. We're just going to send you a check. We don't want any program. We don't want anything here. It's going to be cheaper than what we just pissed away on the other stuff. And if you made, you know, $500 on the year, we'll send you a check for $1,900. I mean, you never lost out by working. You know, I mean, you never once you made $1,000, you didn't get your $2,000 check. It was all incremental. And I'm going to guess, John, was it $5,000? You didn't get anything, or wasn't much. I mean, I can't remember the actual numbers, but it was just a different approach to the same problem. Let's forget the moral hand. Let's not assume everybody who doesn't have any money is avaricious or something. Let's just give them a check. And if they screw that up and don't eat on it, well, then it's on them. Rather than having some huge, you know, program where they never get the dough anyway. You know, I don't know which is right. I mean, they both have their flaws, but you could see why after the War on Poverty, that Nixon came out with a totally different approach. And of course, it never made it through Congress because of the quote moral hazard.
Right. Of course, the irony too was that all during the War on Poverty years with Johnson, the racial strife in the country was at its greatest since Reconstruction. So you know the Watts riots and the Detroit riots, and after King was killed, you know, so many urban riots, and the black, you know, political faction was just kind of like energized. In a way that you would think, well, the declared agenda from Washington has been to throw money at the cities and alleviate poverty and educate the disadvantaged and so on. And there never had been such a profound reaction against it by the people who were supposed to be benefiting from it. So Nixon could ride that to victory in 68 because the nation was so divided and the violence seemed to be spiraling out of control. And that has always struck me as a really great irony that the Democrats created a situation that, you know, ended up biting them. So,
well, I mean, when you look at a lot of Roosevelt's programs, really were Hoover's ideas.
Oh yeah, and Roosevelt tried very hard to distinguish that from, you know, in people's minds. It was presented as a revolt against Hoover's policies, and it wasn't.
Well, because Hoover was not popular. Hoover, early on, a book I learned a lot of this from was Freedom from Fear, William Kennedy, and where Hoover actually was a guy who believed that businessmen were somewhat philanthropic. When the Depression started, he basically went to businesses and said, you know, rather than, you know, let's not lay everybody off, let's keep everybody working 2 days a week or something. And he basically got told to pound sand by everybody. As a matter of fact, in his memoirs, he said, I never ran into such bad people as the people who run corporations or so. He was stunned at how they weren't the benevolent people that he thought they were, which of course you and I probably would never think they were. But, anyway, he tried a lot of the different stuff. I mean, the fact is, when you have a balance sheet recession or depression, it's a problem. If people get laid off for a while, you can come back from that. But if they lose their equity, like they did back then and back in 2007, it takes forever to come out of it. And that's why I don't think people, a lot of whom lost their equity in 2007, are back together yet, John. I mean, I really...
Oh, right, great. And of course, with the New Deal, it was seen as a way of turning its back on Hoover's failed policies, but the New Deal didn't pull us out of the Depression.
No.
That was really World War II and tremendous expansion of military spending and energizing the workforce and, you know, winning the war, that is what pulled us out of the Depression. So it isn't as though the New Deal provided the answers and everything that Hoover had advocated was, you know.
Well, the New Deal provided provided some answers, but the depths that we were in, I mean, I don't even think it's, you know, I've done a reasonable amount of study on it, Jan, and I don't even, they didn't even know the depths they were in. As a matter of fact, one part of the book was Roosevelt's wife, Eleanor, had this friend. The rumor was that she and Eleanor were more than, like, just friends. And,
Lorena Hickok?
I think so, the newspaper lady?
Yeah, yeah.
And what Hopkins did, and again, that, you know, might have been a reason why they picked her or whatever, but they essentially gave her government money. They gave her a car, and they gave her a driver, right?
Yes.
And said, we can't, you know, this is before TV, before, you know, before tweets, before any of that stuff. You go around the country, and you send us letters every week and saying, I don't know, were there even motels in those days? I don't know where the hell she even stayed or where she ate. You go around the country, like all around the country, we'll give you a driver or two in protection, and you write back how bad it is in these areas. And she ended up in, from what I, was a whole chapter on her, I think, Jan, and you probably read more about it, but it was kind of a toss-up between the coal miners who weren't working, because there's nothing else to do in coal country. If you're not working in the mine, you're not farming, you're not growing anything, right? Or the sharecroppers. I mean, both of them were like a life from hell. I mean, and nobody else was that much better, right?
Right.
I mean, so she wrote all this back to them, and most people's view of the Depression as bad as it was, I don't think it was as bad as it, I think it was even worse.
Oh, I think it's never really been grasped how deeply people suffered. And how many people's fortunes were wiped out, and how, let alone the toll in spent energy and worry and nervous breakdowns and suicides and everything else. I mean, I don't think that's ever. And how could you measure it? Maybe, but certainly it wasn't understood by politicians. It wasn't understood in Washington, and the Lorena Hickok episode is one example where you can't beat field work or hands-on research when it comes to something like that. And even then, it was only just one person who was trying to investigate this. And it's never really, I agree, it's never really grasped the imagination and how far we had fallen in those years.
Well, I remember the section on the sharecroppers. Of course, the check went to the, for those that don't know what sharecropping is, I mean, I don't know exactly sure, John, correct me if I'm wrong, but if I own a farm, say I own, whatever, 1,000 acres, which was a lot in those days, especially in the South, I would essentially lease out, say, 50 acres to 20 people. And they would have some little, I use the term shack because I don't think it was a house, and they would live there, and they would farm the 50 acres, correct?
And yeah, you might also lease to the family the implements, so
right.
A plow, maybe livestock or a horse or something to run the plow, tools, things like that. That might be included in the rent.
So you essentially shared. So you got some piece of the production versus what they did, and let's put it this way, they weren't doing so hot. And then when they decided to pay people to not grow in a lot of these areas, I mean, a couple of things that Roosevelt did that were economically, I use the term, correct, but genius, whether it was genius or not. I mean, when you took the child labor out of the system, I mean, you take the 14 and 15 year olds out, what you essentially did was increase the demand for the other people, correct?
Yes.
So if you say to we got too much cotton, we have too much, you know, soybeans, whatever we got, we're going to pay some people not to grow because our export markets are pretty much depleted because they didn't have any money overseas. So what you're doing is you're taking some out of the system and you're messing with the supply and demand to where the prices should go up a little bit. So they would send the farmer who owned the place a check saying you're supposed to share it with the sharecroppers. Of course, they never did. Right? So then people from the north went down and tried to force them to do it. Do-gooders, some of those guys got lynched. And then they tried to have a federal anti-lynching law And then there was the longest filibuster to the time was against the a federal lynching law. So, I mean, those were tough times, John. they weren't, can you imagine filibustering against an anti-lynching law?
Oh, God. Well, yeah, and one of the biggest opponents of child labor laws was the Catholic Church, because this was seen as an invasion of the family's right to govern its own economy. That if you wanted to apprentice your child out to some industry or whatever, it was your business and not the government. So the child labor laws are seen today as a real, blow against primitive economics. Oh, yeah. But at the time, it had some very powerful opponents.
Get that 10-year-old kid working. I can see Manny Weber working at age 10. John, we might have to call on you later in the week, bud. But thank you very much. SP Futures up 250, right where they have been. They haven't budged. NASDAQ Futures up 150. Come back. Mr. David Animal is going to tell us how to invest this whole next year.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, we're back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber. Mr. David Andelman in a second. SP Futures up 3.25. Right about that number. Up 5.25 last night. They were down as much as, well, down to up 1.5. I haven't seen them down yet this morning, so we're nudgingly to the upside. NASDAQ futures up 450. The Dow futures are up 24. I don't really see anything in the Dow moving that much. 3M's up 54 cents, but still a crummy year for those guys. Some of the basic industries, not so hot this year. You could have been in what I consider to be pretty good company, companies, and not had a very good year, which is, it's not as general across the board as I would like it to be. But then again, if you're in one of the ones that moved, it was a very, very, very good year. So it's a question of where you were. Dex down 88.7%, FTSE down 26.3%, CAC around down 13.2%. So, down a little bit there. Nikkei down 181.7%, Shanghai up 34.1%, Hang Seng up 93.3%. Man, so our 10-year, right about where it's been, 1.933. But actually, it's up a little bit. So we were 1.91 maybe last Monday. Bund minus 0.18. Now, this is as high as we've seen this in a real long time. I'll confirm that with David. Japanese minus 0.01. Can we get above zero this week? We will see. UK, 0.84. As you recall, that was point, well, I don't know if you remember this part, but I do this every day. Last week, that was 0.78. So they're nudging up there as well. Oil, up 37 cents, 62.09. Brent, up 64, 68.80. That spread, $7.71. Natural gas, 221. RBOB gas, 175. No 213 this week, Matty. It was 262 out of the burbs. You know what's weird is that the... Since you were hacking around in Iowa the last couple of weeks, the E85 is only like 20 cents cheaper than gas now. The spread used to be like 60 cents. Now it's, the regular gas was 265 and E85 was 245. See, you should know about all that, being an Iowa sort of guy. Gold down $3, 1515. Silver down 2 cents, 1791. What do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Light traffic in the area this holiday week with New Year's Eve tomorrow and then New Year's Day on Wednesday. But still some people going to work. We do have a crash, only one crash on any of the area expressways. That's on the Stevenson northbound side at Pulaski. That's causing some delays. But no issues coming in on the Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. Traffic still looking good on the Stevenson in spite of that crash. Eisenhower looks good, too. Northside expressways have been quiet all morning. Off the expressways, we have a crash on the north side, Sacramento at Belmont. That's causing some delays. And then northwest of there, Milwaukee at Peterson, there is a crash, too. And then out in the western suburbs, Munger Road at Stearns Road, there is a crash. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, overcast, sleet and rain mix, cold temperatures, a high of 36, which is where we're at right now. So we'll hover around freezing or just above freezing throughout most of the day. And we'll have some precipitation as well. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 59 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 38. In sports, the Bears wrapped up their 2019 season, finishing 8-8 after a 21-19 road win over the Vikings last night. Vikings were not playing most of their starters as they're locked into the sixth seed in the playoffs. Of course, Bears had already been eliminated, so it was mostly a meaningless game. But Eddie Pinheiro nailed a game-winning field goal with 10 seconds left after the Bears offense put together a nice game-winning drive. Bears finish at 8-8. Cardinals wrap up their season losing at the Rams 31-24. Sunday Night Football, it was the 49ers locking up the number one seed in the NFC. They beat the Seahawks on the road 26-21. In hockey, Blackhawks have won two in a row. They topped Columbus 3-2 in a shootout. Coyotes doubled up the Stars 4-2. Actually, the Stars doubled up the Coyotes, I should say. Phoenix lost that one 4-2. And in college hoops, Illinois and Notre Dame both win in blowout fashion over some cupcakes. Illinois over NCANT 95-64. Notre Dame beat Alabama A&M 82-56. Northwestern thought they had a cupcake on their schedule, but they lost by 1 point at home to Hartford 67-66.
Chief, what does A&T even mean?
What does A&T mean?
Really, it's agriculture and something. A&M can mean two things, right?
Yeah, A&T is agriculture and technical.
Right, and A&M can mean either agriculture and mining or agriculture and military, right?
I suppose, yeah.
Anywho, hey, so is Chuck Comiskey, has he been reincarnated as the the owner of Minnesota. Sitting that guy with one and a half a sack to get.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw this, David, if you watched any of the Bear game yesterday. I wouldn't blame you if you didn't watch any of the game, but...
I watched probably 5 minutes.
Yeah, it was pretty boring and pretty meaningless, but there was one thing that I thought was funny. So they're showing the Vikings rested a lot of their starters, as
right.
You know, which makes sense. And one of them was a defensive end who's having a really good season, and apparently he had a clause in his contract that said if he hits 15 sacks or more in the regular season, he gets a $500,000 bonus, which obviously a very nice bonus. So he's sitting there on the sideline in basically street clothes because they're resting him, and he has 14 and a half sacks. So it's,
oh, God.
He's a half a sack short. And so, of course, he's on the do not dress list, and one of the meathead announcer, I don't know who it was, but former player, goes, I'll tell you what, you know, the $500,000 bonus would be nice, but he'd much rather rest up and get ready for the playoffs than get that $500,000. And I'm thinking,
oh, yeah.
Really? Is it? Do you think that's true? I don't think so.
I'm going to say I play and I, as soon as I get my half sack, I'm done.
Yeah, I think.
Well, wasn't there something, too, with Kirk Cousins, certain number, 300 starts or 200 starts in a row or whatever, and there was something in his thing, you know, about not getting hurt, so that he needed to at least play one down, and they thought, everyone said, oh, you know, he's going to take the first snap and then he's going to be out for the game, and he didn't play at all either.
Yeah, one of the who was the announcer, man? They were talking about that too. They he'd broken his streak of starts or whatever.
Right.
I didn't know there was money involved in it, but probably these contracts are pretty. They're all over the place, so it wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Yeah, especially for quarterbacks, because it, you know, the concept is that that'll mean they stayed healthy.
Yeah. So, interesting. I mean, I wonder if they had any kind of discussion beforehand. It's not something. I mean, the agent's pissed he didn't get his 100 grand if he's getting 20%, right? What are those guys
right.
get?
15?
Yeah, really.
So, David, we have it's only, well, tomorrow's New Year's Eve, but you can tell us today how to trade the whole next year.
Well, I can't tell you that. Nobody can. But I do think that, especially this last, I would call it a melt-up. I mean, it hasn't been super-duper dynamic to the upside, but every time the market, you know, ticks two handles, three handles lower in the S&P, other than maybe, you know, Friday, it rallies. So it's somewhat of a melt-up, and I think there is year-end portfolio dressing. You know, there's some enthusiasm, and, you know, there's a reluctance to sell profitable stocks, you know, as far as tax purposes. So I do think that, although typically the first 10 days of January are positive seasonally, I think we borrowed a lot of that. So I do think, you know, we'll probably stay firm today and tomorrow. And then, you know, I'm not going to say we're going to walk into an avalanche. There's going to be folks and institutions and hedge funds that book profits the first, you know, week to 2 weeks of the year.
I ran into, I'll say an acquaintance, David, the other night. He's got a nice account. And to be perfectly blunt, he brought his account in one day, and I just said, you know what? I think you're better off where you are. Was one of those kind of deals.
Yeah.
I mean, you very kind of rarely say that, but I did. And is one of those kind of no-pleasing sort of dudes. And
You're right.
So he's got, he's seven figures. He's not up, you know, what the market is. Well, put it this way, where most people think the market is, because everybody thinks everybody's right. up 27%. They're not. I mean, depending, if you're into Russell, what are you up, four? Five? I mean,
well, Go ahead. I have a thought after you finish.
What I'm saying is, it's very, I mean, the XLE, you barely got positive, you know, in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, 1%.
So you could be, I mean, you could be in manufacturing and be in 3M and Schlumberger and have the worst year in years. But the,
right.
But the point being is, it's been generally up market. If you've been in the S&P, certainly you're up. So the guy is, he's saying, you know, I don't know, I don't think we're going that much higher, blah, 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 blah. And I said, okay, well, I mean, so you're up, whatever. I still remember his account. Oh, not that much. I'm up like this. So what are you going to do about it? Well, what do you mean? I said, you're telling me that you don't think it's going much higher. Are you going to protect it? Are you going to take some of the ones that you think are maybe out on their skis a little bit and lighten up? Well, we're still going up every day. I understand that part, but well, then why would I sell now? Well, I don't know. I mean, I'll sell, you know, when it's. I said, what makes you think? I honestly think that the guys like you and I that actually do trading. I mean, I'm not saying that people on TV don't. I've been here an awful long time, David, and I've never once gotten the memo. I mean, if my people, if you have a stock that, forget all about options and that kind of stuff that we do for people. If you have a stock that is, if you think, for instance, that if you, you know, somebody comes in with, you know, $20 million, and the two of you sit there, you and the account holder, the client, and they say, you know, to be diversified, I don't think you want to be more than, let's say, you can say 5%, you can say 8%. Some people could go 10%, David, but whatever. There's an agreed upon number with you and the client, all right? And if say, the guy was an Apple guy, in which a lot of people are. I mean, there's no, the stock's done nothing but do well, so I'm not about to disparage that. But if you sort of have this tacit agreement that I don't want to be over 10% in anything, you know, and I've got this $20 million account, which is pretty friggin' rare, you know, okay, that's $2 million in Apple. Well, if you started the year with $2 million in Apple, it's now what? 4 or 3.8 or something, right?
Right, right.
So now say the account, you didn't have a whole lot of clunkers. You didn't have a 3M. You didn't have this, anyway. So say your $20 million account is now $2.3 million, which is pretty good. You know, so let's say it's up 15%.
Right.
Or if you had Apple in there that much, it's probably up 16. But say 230, just for grins. Well, now Apple is way, it's pushing 20% of that account, or certainly 35, right? So if you stick to your own rules, it's not like you don't like, you know, Cook or anything like that. You don't like the Trump administration. You don't like China. The fact is, you're talking to yourself. Okay, my investment plan is that I don't really want an unhinged account. Now, if you buy puts on it, I can protect it in ways to where it's not 20% of your risk. But let's leave that off the table for a minute. If you're just a straight stock account, you're going to say to yourself, self, I've got too much Apple. Right?
Right.
It has nothing to do
with... Well, that's what rebalancing programs are about. If you keep, you know, 10... If you want 10% and, you know, 10 different issues, and one all of a sudden, because it's appreciated and the others have lagged, now 25%, you're going to have to trim and rebalance the account, whether that means new issues or, you know, taking the money from Apple and putting it into the 3Ms. You know, that's not for me to say, but that's what rebalancing is all about.
Well, that's why it's important to have a dialogue with your client to where when you're going to get the inevitable, why do you want me to sell my Apple? That's when you say, I don't want you to sell your Apple. Last year we had the initial conversation here, right in my notes, you said you didn't want to be more than 10% in any one stock.
Right.
I'm just telling you what you said. Now, if the new number is now 20 because the Apple went up, I'll roll with that. It's your account. But I'm just saying, it's your idea that 10% was the number, or 8 or 7 or 6. And by the way, 10's pretty prudent. I mean, I don't think you'd start the day out. Now, you and I are capable, by doing some, by using the option products, we can cut the 20% Apple down to being only 10% of the risk. But
right.
Still, it's 20% of the account. And, you know, so these decisions are there for a reason. I mean, it's funny when people go back, you know, you see people making the same mistakes all the time. When I say mistakes, David, going against the grain. Because when I was in grad school, a long, long time ago, people at the University of Chicago would do research. They were the first people to have every stock tick going back to God knows when on their computer,
right,
on their mainframe at the University of
Chicago. Yeah, random walk theory and all that.
So they were the Center for Securities Analysis, and now there's probably 50 universities that have got stuff as good or better. So they would say that, by and large, it's very difficult for, in those days, mutual fund managers or any kind of big cap Bob, mid cap Mike. I mean, really what you're doing is you're overweight and underweight and stuff. You know, instead of IBM being 4%, you don't like IBM, it's 2% in your portfolio. You like IBM, it's 5%. That's all you're really doing within the same. So the idea that to win 2 and 3 years in a row is really very difficult, because most people just stick with their winners from the year before. and stocks right. don't necessarily. I mean, there are going to be some. Somebody look at the history of Apple. There's years when for 5 years you wanted it, and there's 5 years you didn't want it, right? So it's not like, right. I mean, so the idea is, and yet you see people constantly, well, who did better last year? What was your return last year? Well, I run a protected portfolio and the market was way up last year. Well, then I don't want that because I want the guy who was up last year.
Oh, and that's what I was going to refer to. You know, you were talking about the indexes and something up, you know, 27% and NASDAQ maybe more and Dow maybe a little bit less and that kind of thing. So let's just call it, you know, 25%. That's fine, but people easily forget the last quarter of 2018.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, we had a 20-some percent, you know, decline, and we had the worst Christmas, worst December, and, you know, 88 years, worst quarter in 11 years. And so if you go back five quarters instead of four quarters, and you started, you know, Labor Day of 2018, the indexes are up 9%, average stock is up 6%.
Yeah.
6% in the last five quarters. So folks look at it both ways. Oh my God, this is, and myself, I said the word melt up today because the market doesn't correct and give, you know, a breather, you know, to the longs and the shorts. And that's what it's been for the last few weeks. That said, if you take a step back and look at the last five quarters, the market actually, the average stock over five quarters has actually underperformed.
Well, whenever three or four, especially at the high end of the percentage of the cap weighted index is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
Whenever they outperform, all the rest of the stuff obviously is going to look lower.
Right.
I mean, what was the oil sector, the XLE? You're the only guy that knows this probably off the top of his head.
It's 18% now. It's 4.
Yeah, I was going to say it was 18% what, 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And now it's 4.
It's 4.
And it's and all of a sudden now everybody on TV is all over oil and stuff this year. And I'm not supposed to agree with you, David. Here's what I think about the oil. I do believe that if oil stays in the low to mid 60s, that there will be some catching up in the oils, in the oil service, the XOP, the XLE. Because I have a lot of my people in the XLE that actually finally had a decent month after so many that weren't so decent. I think that there's some catching up to do. Cause
reversion to the mean, and you know, you can only push, I mean, and I'm not in XLE, and I'm not in XLK per se, the technology ETF, but you know, I have a lot of tech stocks on the books, so I'm gonna go against, you know, my holdings, but I agree, you know, you can only push tech so far where you've factored in, you know, innovation and, you know, artificial intelligence and machine learning and whatever is factored into the price when you expand the multiples. And on the other side, when you hit, you know, the oils because of debt and, you know, debt equity ratios and blah, 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 and blah, 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 you know, at least for now, until we go to, you know, until we go to, autonomous cars and all electric vehicles and, you know, this and that and the other and total clean energy and whatever, you still are using fossil fuels, and these folks have diversified their portfolios, and, you know, there's value there.
Well, I'm right with you on this, which, again, you're not supposed to. I think that if oil stays at, say 64, 65 for a while because Russia and those guys are cutting back, I think that the XLE, which is 60 now, I think you could see a 65 to 70 XLE. I don't think you're going to see an 80 or 90. I mean, I think that ship has sailed, right? I mean, in this country, for sure, every time somebody gets a new car, it uses less gas than the old car. And
right.
I think you are going to see some people, you know, the government for sure. I mean, there aren't more natural gas vehicles, I have no idea. Now, of course, natural gas is a fossil fuel, but there's more of it. I think you're going to see more electric cars, but then again, depending on if your utility uses oil to burn, they use more oil to burn for the car than if the car ran gas, right? By the time you run it over the wires. So it depends on where you're getting it. But the point being is, I don't see you know, worldwide, of course, there's still a lot of people who don't even have a car, or there's no vans in the neighborhood. So the worldwide demand, I think, could go up. But in this country, I don't see a runaway, you know, oil demand running to the upside. That's not a that's not the incredible growing industry that it probably was 40 years ago.
No, unless there's big time geopolitical stuff. I mean, the days of, you know, $100 you know, $100 a barrel, and, you know, $120 And I remember when Goldman Sachs said somewhere between $200 and $240 a barrel. Well, that didn't happen, and I don't think it's ever going to happen.
Well, you, I mean, if all of a sudden there was a big spat in the Strait of Hormuz and 15 ships went down, you couldn't get through there. Well,
it could. Yeah. You never know, but it would take that geopolitical event or series of events.
Yeah, there's like something, there are 20, 21 countries that are exporting oil now, or could. There's a lot of them. I mean, some of them are pretty small, but there's at least 10 that are decent.
And they've refined, and it, not to use a pun, but they've refined their methodologies, their production capabilities, where they're just better.
Well, I mean, what if Venezuela, who by everybody's imagination has more oil there than Saudi, and what if they ever got their act together? I mean, are we're assuming they're off the market forever? Are they selling?
I think the market is, the market is discounting that to an extent.
Are they selling anything? I mean, I have not seen an article. I'm going to have to start. My New Year's resolution is I'm going to have to take Kath out for an adult beverage and say, where'd you used to get all your information? I think I'm going to have to sign up for like the New York Times and Al Jazeera or someplace. Seems that, you know, you and I were talking last week. Why is the Fed doing what they're doing? Are they going to do it all year? And if there's a problem, where's the problem? We named like Venezuela, Argentina, Italy, Greece. Is it Cyprus? Which one? Cyprus, where they got the banks, the Russian banks are all. I mean, there could be any one of 8 or 9 powder kegs. How do we even know? I don't see it anywhere. Do you?
No.
There's got to be, you know, what I might have to do as much as I, boy, talk about putting yourself to sleep. I may have to get back in The Economist.
It will be very interesting in this coming year if, you know, whether it's money supply or stock buybacks or whatever, if the pace continues, because I got to believe that that has been a huge, huge part of this, you know, 2019 rally.
The last 3 months, I think it's been all of it. Maybe, you know, I mean, all of it.
Right. And for a while, the stock buybacks had, you know, diminished a little bit, and then they came right back in spades.
But they've been, why we're talking about, there's money spilling out of the Fed every day. And we're not, and it's not going to you or me. It's very uneven. That's why, you know, the inflation is, I mean, I talk about all the time, and I'm sure people wonder why the hell I do it. I'm like, but it is so bad when it starts because it's not even. Some people love it. I mean, you know, Maddie Weber, we're just talking about somebody, you know, making a $500,000 bonus for getting 15 sacks. Well, clearly, it's headed to, I mean, does anybody think, I mean, what would you guess, Maddie, that the, how long has it taken for the price of all major league franchises to, quote, double? Is it 7 years?
Yeah, it seems relatively recent.
Yeah. I mean, the Cubs were bought for, when did these guys buy the Cubs?
13 or 14?
So, let's 13 say...
13, maybe?
Let's say 7 years ago, they paid, what, $800
million?
Now, they put a lot of money into the place.
It says $900 million.
Okay, I thought it was like $880 or something.
They bought the Cubs in 2009.
All right, so what do you think it's worth now? $2.5-3 billion?
Something like that. That's what it's quoted as, yeah.
But, I mean, They put what would you say they put in the place? I mean, it's got to be.
They put a lot into it. Well, they claim to not have any money, so.
Yeah, well.
My son, I mean, anecdotally, I mean, he's worked on a lot of the outside projects, you know, with his firm, with the parking and the restaurants and the this and that. And I can't tell you exactly, but I think they have about 25% of the renovation and improvement contracts. And I want to say it's $80 million.
Their piece,
and that isn't player personnel or whatever. I'm just talking about, you know, the garden outside and the parking facilities and, you know, some of the restaurants and this and that and the other. So I mean, it's beyond the team and salaries and this and that and the other. And in the park, outside of the park, they've put in a couple hundred million for sure.
Well, and I think a lot of that, you know, they're getting money back on that day one with the concessions and everything. But I mean, some of the stuff they did in the park was just delayed maintenance. But then again, a new stadium would have cost you, you know, bill, right?
Somewhere. Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, I still think they're probably better off. But so, David, we won't be back. We do our predictions on Thursday.
I think we're going to stay firm the next couple days, and then I do think that we're going to head lower the first 2 weeks of the year, just stay excelling if nothing else.
All right, we'll pick our stocks of the year and our spreads of the year on Thursday.
Okay, sounds good.
SP Futures up 4, NASDAQ Futures up 550. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's, get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early. I
got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.